Just as Mozart responded to the quartets of Haydn, the father of the string quartet, with his own masterpieces in the genre, so in the following century did Antonin Dvorak aspire towards a new standard set by Johannes Brahms. This summer's second Carte Blanche concert, Quartet Connections, brings together music by these four composers, spanning the genre's classical beginnings and its romantic apex, performed by the Escher Quartet. The program comprises Mozart's string quartet in B-flat major, nicknamed The Hunt, Brahms' third string quartet, also in B-flat major, Haydn's quartet in G major, opus 76, number 1, and Dvorak's string quartet number 13 in G major, opus 106. This past spring, I spoke with Escher Quartet violinist Aaron Boyd, who revealed the program's underlying theme.
The entire program is either explicitly The Hunt or the Pastorale. And in Haydn's case, it is implicit in so much of his music, the pastoral, the woods. In fact, I mean, all the Viennese composers share that in common. Of course, the Mozart is even called that. And because it has that rollicking 6-8, you know, hunting horn quality. And of course, G major, Dvorak. Dvorak is very much the same, where it's steeped in the country, steeped in nature, especially this G major quartet. And so I think they share all of that in common, this the sense of pastoral and outdoors.
The program begins with Mozart's Hunt Quartet. Composed in 1784, The Hunt represents, for better or worse, one of Mozart's most popular quartets.
It's true. And in fact, the Mozart has the burden of being so often played as a kind of gig piece. Goodness, the number of times that I've played it at, you know, weddings and parties and things like that. And when in fact, once you get past this, this history, this performance history, but it really is a very serious and great work, and one which actually gets played very rarely in a serious context because of that. Yeah, delightful, light, you know, it couldn't be much more different than, say, the D minor 421, for example. It's right. A completely different sensibility almost.
The program proceeds in the same key of B-flat major, with Brahms' string quartet number 3, opus 67, composed in 1875. It is the last of Brahms' three string quartets, a corpus of notoriously thorny works. They are challenging for even the most skilled quartets to play, and, for the listener, depict a generally brooding character.
Somehow, Beethoven's shadow looming over him bothered him even more, I suspect, in the string quartet than in the symphonic form. And yet, this B-flat seems to be relieved of, say, the burden of the A minor. Finally, this is similarly lighthearted and playful. So in that sense, it's also unique amongst the three quartets in being that way, not being so serious. Thank you. like Opus 74 of the Harp Quartet of Beethoven ends with the variations, and it is a delightful work, much like the Mozart's.
How would you characterize his writing for strings? I mean, when you say that it's...
Actual string writing itself is not a problem. It's fantastic. It's just that when you compare, for example, and I think the audience will do so, when you compare, if we were playing the A minor quartet, for example, against any one of the late Dvorak's, I think someone listening truly objectively would say, yes, I think somehow Dvorak was of a freer mind and less concerned with Beethoven and with trying to make an immortal statement. He just so naturally, the music breathes. The Dvorak quartets breathe.
Dvorak composed his string quartet in G major, opus 106, in 1895, 2 years after his most famous work in the genre, the beloved and ubiquitous American Quartet.
I once asked Samuel Rhodes in the Juilliard Quartet, why didn't you guys play the American? He said, because there were so many other fantastic ones that never get played. And I completely agree with that. These last three, the G major, A flat, C major, are absolute masterpieces that very rarely get played, which is, now, people very often make the snide comment that, well, there must be a reason for them. In this case, it doesn't apply. There is no reason other than that they might be little. They're too hard for students to play. And maybe, I think it's still possible that mature musicians don't trust that Dvorak is going to make an impact. But when we play it, goodness, the audience, they love the music. We love the music. It is so natural, so honest, so inspired. Goodness, I'm grateful that we can. I mean, it's, for me, Dvorak is the Schubert of the second half of the 19th century, and I love him for it. Well, with regard specifically to the G major, but it applies to the C major and the A flat as well, the canvas is large. These are large structures. These are large, serious musical structures with a breathtaking amount of melodic and harmonic surprise and beauty and inventiveness. And they still have that Czech quality of wistfulness and homesickness and sadness and the dance. There's still these frenetic, wild dance elements as well. It has it all. I can't say enough about it.
We've skipped over Haydn.
Oh, we should never skip over
Haydn. We should never skip over Haydn, especially when we talk about the string quartet.
You're right.
Formed.
When I was younger, I was very lucky to have very good teachers, and one of them being the father of Daniel and Todd Phillips, the violinist of the Orion Quartet. That was Eugene Phillips, who just a month ago passed away at the age of 97. Anytime I would say, oh, I'm going to play Tchaikovsky, or oh, I'm going to play Mendelssohn, he'd say, oh, forget that, you should be playing Haydn. Haydn is the greatest. And when I was a kid, I thought, yeah, I accepted that, but I didn't believe it. Now, not only do I believe it, I teach it. Because we've spent enough time with the quartets. I've spent enough time with the quartets, with the creation now, with the seven last words. When I'm inside of that music, I think, oh, yes, this is the greatest. There's always something to the person who was the first to do something. I asked somebody once about this issue of Haydn, why was he so great? And they said, well, you know, Roger Bannister, when he broke the 3-minute mile, for years people had said it could not be done. Now it's done on a regular basis, all the time. I don't know if it's 3 or 5 minutes, by the way.
Just for the record, Roger Bannister was the first to run a 4-minute mile.
Doesn't matter. Whatever the time limit was that was considered impossible, that the human body was impossible, Roger Bannister did it. And his accomplishment is far greater than anyone since who has met or beaten that time, because it came from the inner impulse. He wasn't copying. He invented. And so when it comes from, in the case of Haydn, an inner impulse in his inventing of this form and inventing, and just, my God, the generosity of this man who worked for years, for decades, and just the music kept pouring out of him. Well, that's a unique situation, actually, not even matched by Beethoven or Schubert or Shostakovich, for that matter. No, this was an extraordinary and unique genius, and honestly, one of my favorites.